This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 16th, 2018. Welcome, I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this special edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. The big deal feature in the aftermath of the arrest in Vancouver and the bail for Huawei's Meng Wanzhou, I speak with a former journalist from England who spent 2.5 years in a Chinese jail. And I feature highlights of the Transparency International Canada Vancouver Day of Dialogue, where a groundbreaking barometer of corruption in Western Canada was released. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who deserve it. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is the rush to criticize Canada for arresting Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou completely wrong? Former Liberal Foreign Affairs Minister John Manley said Canada should have used, quote, creative incompetence, end quote, to turn a blind eye and let Meng go on her way to Mexico. Of course, Manley would say that. He is on the board of directors of TELUS. Not only does TELUS sell Huawei smartphones, but the two companies operate a 5G network research and development center in downtown Vancouver. Canada has law enforcement and extradition treaties with the United States. Both countries must respect those treaties. There was probable cause to put Hong Kong-arrived Meng in custody at Vancouver International Airport on December 1st, based on the August-issued arrest warrant from a judge in New York. The system worked properly because Meng was allowed a hearing in open court and eventually granted bail under strict conditions. The U.S. has until February 1st to file its case for extradition of Meng with the BC Supreme Court. The U.S. already provided basic evidence of Meng's participation in meetings with global bank HSBC. The U.S. alleges Meng misled HSBC about Skycom, a Huawei puppet company that did business illegally in Iran. Justice William Urquhart, who granted Meng bail, said there was not enough evidence to conclude that Meng had avoided travel to the U.S. since spring 2017 for fear of U.S. police. There will have to be stronger evidence by February 1st on that count. Meng maintains her innocence, and Meng vows to fight the extradition charges. So let the court process unfold as it should, and shed no tears for Meng, who is the daughter of a multi-billionaire and a resident of a luxury house in Dunbar. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The eyes of the world were on Vancouver in 1986 when the city hosted the World's Fair on the themes of transportation and communication. The eyes of the world were on Vancouver again last week because of transportation and communication. Huawei Technologies Chief Financial Officer Meng Wanzhou was released on bail on December 11th, 10 days after she was arrested at Vancouver International Airport. Meng is the 46-year-old daughter of company founder Ren Zhengfei, a former People's Liberation Army soldier who built one of the world's biggest telecommunications companies. Meng is perhaps the most powerful woman in business in China. The Canadian government lawyer argued she should be kept in jail for fear of flight back to China. But her lawyer successfully argued for Meng's $10 million bail, which includes several conditions. Meng, who is living in the house that is in her husband's name in Dunbar, will go back to court on February 6th to fix a date for extradition proceedings. The proceedings could last months, if not years. Meanwhile, Canada is now stuck in a diplomatic row with China, which arrested businessman Michael Spavor and diplomat Michael Kovrig in retaliation. Canada's tourism minister and BC's forestry minister have both cancelled official visits to China. Which brings me to Peter Humphrey. Peter Humphrey is a former foreign correspondent for the Reuters News Service and is a former head of China investigations for PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers. Humphrey, who is fluent in Mandarin, owned China Wise, a risk management consultancy that was focused on white-collar crime and fraud in China. But the Chinese government ruined his company and almost ruined him. Peter and his wife, Yu Yingjing, were hired to investigate a former employee of a big pharma company, GlaxoSmithKline, in China, but it turned out the former employee was working with Chinese police. The Chinese police eventually arrested Humphrey and Yu in 2013 and put them in jail, They were tortured, they were tried, and they were convicted, subject to forced and false confessions which were broadcast. They were finally released in 2015 after international diplomatic pressure and because of illness. Peter was treated for prostate cancer and was suffering post-traumatic stress disorder. Peter joined me on the Breaker.News podcast from his home in Surrey, England. Peter, what are your thoughts on the arrest and the bail for Meng Wanzhou?
The arrest sounds like it's based on very black and white information that has been gathered after a very long professional investigation. And, you know, this has to be played through the justice system. And the fact that Canada has released her on bail is really a very, very good sign that Canada is a country under the rule of law, in great contrast to all the scare stories that we hear in China. You know, Ms. Meng is now free on bail. She's free to go to see her doctors if she needs to. She's free to see her family. She's free to communicate widely. Yes, she's under surveillance, she's tagged, but she's, for all intents and purposes, free. A marked contrast with the two Canadians who have been arrested in Beijing who are being held in incommunicado in a tit-for-tat action. It's also a marked contrast to the barbaric manner in which I and my wife were treated. You know, we were never bailed. I had prostate cancer. They knew it. They didn't want to admit it, didn't tell me. And I was unable to get any medical treatment until I was released after 2 years in captivity. My wife had a kidney disease, same thing, okay? And this is a formidable contrast in the way that a country under the rule of law, with independent courts, independent judges, transparent due process, behaves, and a country such as China, where it's putting a massive elite called the Communist Party above the law. In your country, in Canada, and in my country, in the UK, nobody is above the law. In China, Communist Party is above the law. The leadership is above the law. They can do what they like. And they use law. It's not rule by law. Rule of law in China. It's rule by the law. And that means the law is used as a toy or a big stick held by those in power to bash the people who they don't like. You know, in my experience, watching many, many detainees in pre-trial custody centers in China and many convicts in Chinese prison in China, people who I met personally inside those walls, I find it very hard to imagine that any criminal prosecution in China, not one single criminal prosecution in China, would withstand scrutiny in a real court of law with an independent judge in a country under the rule of law. That's the difference.
Not only is the Communist Party in China above the law, as you say, but it ramped up the propaganda machine worldwide and outside the courtroom after Meng's arrest. Inside the court where I was, there was no evidence put forward at all that she was mistreated in jail.
China is waging a propaganda war against the rest of the world. You know, on the one hand, China is trying to project and force its view of governance and its view of world upon all the other countries on the planet through its propaganda machine, especially through its state-owned TV broadcasting operations. It's also trying to use its propaganda machine to prejudice public opinion when you have disagreements between China and another country, or when you have instances like the arrest of Ms. Meng. China is using this propaganda machine to prejudice any possible impartial outcome. We also see China's propaganda machine being used as an instrument of repression, hand in glove with the police state in China, in the form of extracting and broadcasting completely forced and falsified so-called confessions in front of their TV cameras and then broadcasting them to the world to try to prejudice any possible fair outcome, a fair trial, for example. That's what happened to me. Ms. Meng is not having to suffer any of that in Canada because Canada is a country under the rule of law with transparent processes. She's not suffering any of that. And for Chinese media to suggest that her human rights abuses, she's suffering from human rights abuses, is absolutely ludicrous. You can see from her demeanor in the pictures and images that have been released of her in the last couple of days, there's nothing wrong with her. You know, she is perfectly okay, and she has access to doctors if she needs them. So this is complete nonsense coming out of Beijing.
And you've complained to regulators in the UK about the Chinese state broadcaster CCTV, which airs forced and false confessions of prisoners, including yours. What is the status of that complaint?
While I was held in captivity in China on false charges, I never had any opportunity to discuss my situation and my case freely with my consuls or with my lawyers or with my family. I was very, very limited in the communication that was allowed to me. It was almost impossible for me to communicate. I also was put through these forced confession scenarios. I had been under duress for many, many weeks, malnourished, no access to doctors for my medical conditions, living in a 15 square meter cell with no furniture, 12 cellmates all sleeping on the floor at night, a hole in the corner of the room as a place to use as a toilet. No, this is a serious duress here. And then they do that. They put me in a cage, in handcuffs, lock me in a chair, point cameras through the cage bars, and a policeman pretends to be a journalist asking me questions and trying to prompt me on what answers I should give. You know, it was an appalling, traumatic experience that they put me through. They then broadcast this, not only in China, without my consent, without any proper inputs or comment from me on what they'd packaged together. They broadcast it not only in China, but around the planet and in my own country to destroy my reputation and prejudice my chances for a fair trial. That's what they did. They did it in my country. In my country, we have the rule of law. And we have laws on broadcasting standards, which include issues like privacy, fairness, and the content. I have discovered this opportunity to hold Chinese television to account for the human rights crimes that they committed against me and my wife, hand in glove with the Chinese police state.
That was Peter Humphrey, who survived being jailed in China. Peter joined me on the Breaker.News podcast from his home in Surrey, England. Transparency International Canada released the first Western Canada Corruption Barometer in time for its 2018 Vancouver Day of Dialogue on December 13th. Mike Zako, a professor at University of British Columbia's Okanagan campus, analyzed the results of a Leger poll of more than 1,200 people in British Columbia, Alberta, and Saskatchewan. The survey gauged the perceptions of Western Canadians about what corruption is, how corruption affects them, and how to stop corruption. In British Columbia, for instance, 26% of respondents saw the oil and gas sector as extremely corrupt. In Vancouver, 37% called the real estate sector extremely corrupt. A parallel survey focusing on the oil, gas, and mining sector found almost two-thirds of the 100 executives surveyed did not consider corruption to be a problem for their industry. That study's author, Daniela Camiso dos Santos of Invenient Solutions, said most of the oil, gas, and mining executives were unaware of a 2015 federal transparency law that requires the reporting to government of payments made by companies to governments. I was honored to be the moderator of a session at the Vancouver Day of Dialogue about the Western Canada Corruption Barometer. Here was what Zako and dos Santos had to say about their research.
We certainly can't rank different sectors in terms of which ones are more or less corrupt on the basis of this data. But Western Canadians at levels between 20 and 40% are reporting the abuse of power by bosses, which could mean making unfair demands on employees' time or sexual harassment in the workplace. Respondents also report improper expense claims, rule breaking, either to benefit individuals personally, or if we're talking about the public sector, rule breaking to advance private business interests. Now, what about ways to combat corruption? So while Western Canadians are more likely to consider various levels of government as being ineffective at fighting corruption than they are to consider the government as effective, approximately 40% say government is ineffective on this issue compared to 25% who say it is effective. Western Canadians do express a willingness to fight against corruption in their own lives and in ways that suggest they feel that these ways of fighting corruption can be effective. So we see some kinds of cynicism manifesting in these results, but there's also this optimistic side. If most Western Canadians thought reporting was ineffective, or if they were willing to tolerate corruption, we see lower numbers here. This is important because ideas around corruption are linked to trust, and a lack of trust in Canadian institutions, like our parliamentary democracy, can have harmful consequences. But Western Canadians are not without options or without willingness to tackle these issues.
More than half of those surveyed say corruption is a major problem, but it ranks behind the cost of living, poverty, environmental damage, jobs, and security in the minds of respondents. So I asked Mike Zacco and Daniela Camiso dos Santos why the public doesn't understand or realize that the economy and environment are both affected by corruption.
Corruption, sort of by definition, is secret, and it takes a lot of hard work to bring these things to light, whether it's something like the bread price-fixing scandal at Canadian supermarkets or the various police investigations. You know, for media, this takes a lot of time, dedicated investigative reporting, resources that are stretched thin, and police are also challenged by these sorts of long-term, complex investigations that they often don't necessarily have the resources to handle in terms of the scope. So helping people make that connection to their daily lives is certainly a challenge, and I mean, in Vancouver, that connection seems to be the real estate market, which pretty much everyone has something personal to say about. In situations where that's not quite as obvious to people, it is going to require some greater awareness and digging.
There's sometimes this perception that corruption is a victimless crime, right? And ultimately, that is not true, especially not within the extractive sector, because ultimately corrupt acts can lead to human rights breaches and can lead to much bigger problems, and ultimately the most vulnerable are those that are impacted and are the victims of corruption, so especially women and children. And we can see that within the extractive sector, where heinous cases occur of human rights breaches on women and women and children, which are a result of corrupt activity. So you're 100% right in the sense that, first of all, we need to see this as they're victims, it's a crime, we need to get down to it, we need to really understand what's going on in our backyard.
The survey said that the public trusts the media and civil society groups to battle corruption because politicians and their parties are seen as corrupt and government efforts have been largely fruitless. So I asked Zacco and Dos Santos what the public can do.
Well, in terms of some of these survey results about willingness to fight corruption, I think it's important to have a closer look at particular organizations, at particular sectors, like this extractives report, and ask similar sorts of questions about accountability mechanisms that exist in those domains, about whistleblower protections, about, you know, how comfortable people are going to their superiors to report something that they've seen, and more of a measurement of what sorts of things that people have actually witnessed and how they have addressed those, in the same way that Statistics Canada carries out victimization surveys, and something that we've seen developing in Australia, where public sector employees were polled about sorts of things that they've directly witnessed, and something like 4,000 reported that they have indeed witnessed corruption, and now as a result of some of that work, which Transparency International has been involved in, measuring Australian public opinion yesterday, the Australian government, the federal government announced that they're creating a new anti-corruption commission with really broad, sweeping scope. So, I mean, those specific measures about willingness to fight corruptions, they they're quite general, and then what we need to do is look more specifically at particular sectors, at particular kinds of corruption, and think about what sorts of means we can go about addressing it in those cases.
Business believes that business is the best entity to actually fight corruption within its own ranks, which I think is very, it's very consistent with the idea of self-regulation that is very common. Business' entire area of corporate social responsibility is based on this idea of self-regulation. But I think that I'm a firm believer in carrots and sticks, and I think that people are afraid of going to jail, most people. And clear carrots and sticks and clear whistleblower legislation is really the way to go, especially for those that are in positions of power, but that sometimes don't have the right mechanisms to be able to do this. So, for example, lawyers, if we look at lawyers and the whistleblower aspects of legal counsel and how they can deal with internal corruption within their corporations, it's really quite complicated, and there ought to be a better way to deal with it.
That was Mike Zyko of UBC Okanagan and Daniela Camiso dos Santos of Invenient Solutions. They both appeared at the Vancouver Day of Dialogue on December 13th. You can read more about the studies on thebreaker.news. And go to transparencycanada.ca to learn more about the corruption-fighting organization. Now it's time for the virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people who make a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the late Angelo Iacobucci. The senior reporter with radio station CHNL in Kamloops died suddenly on December 14th. He was 61. My sincere condolences to his family and to those who worked with Angelo at Radio NL. Iacobucci was a voice on which listeners in the BC interior relied upon for the better part of 5 decades. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send us an email to bob at thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Go to sprucehill.ca for more information. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 16th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thank you for joining me. Did you know that on December 16th in 1773, that the Boston Tea Party happened as the Sons of Liberty dumped crates of tea into Boston Harbor to protest taxes on tea and for the right of no taxation without representation? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.